Jeff is back to interviewing artists and writers on Everything is Awesome. He and his guests cover social issues from a leftist perspective. Check out all his many works at jeffsawesomepods.com.
This is an Unspoiled Network podcast.
This is Some Spoil, the Song of Ice and Fire 2, the co-host Switcheroo the Rereadening, Return to Westeros, HBO Spoiler Edition, Uncut, Uncensored, Too Hot for, all of this, you know, what we're doing here. Welcome to the show. We are covering today chapters 28, 29, Sansa and Arya, back-to-back, Sisters Edition. And unfortunately, this is the one where Sansa is surprise married.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Welcome to Unspoiled.
Monsters are dangerous, and just now, kings are dying like flies.
I am the king!
Fuck the king.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Natasha.
I'm Rashawn.
So, the surprise wedding.
Bitch! They really did just wake her up and put her in a dress and at the last minute be like, oh, by the way, you're getting married.
I swear, and then, I had forgotten that she puts it together from like the cloak. And so then, she figures it out at the last moment.
And not only at the last minute, but then still doesn't know who she's marrying.
Right.
And then realizes, like, when Cersei has to say, you know, basically, I think it's terrible that you're marrying my monster of a brother. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. So, do you remember in the show, she knows the wedding is coming a little bit ahead of time?
I was wondering about that.
Okay. I'm asking, not saying.
Oh, sorry. Well, then, no, I don't know.
Yeah. My surprise at how it unfolds in the book makes me think it was handled differently in the show, but that is just me guessing, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I was so taken aback by how this went that it really feels like new information to me.
Okay, the notes from Austin say in the show they have her at least be told about it a little bit beforehand with Tyrion breaking the news to her.
Okay. Did you read the notes beforehand like
you
said?
No, I did not. I completely didn't. Sorry. I'm, you know.
Do you want to stop and do that or no?
No.
Oh, okay, I'm just checking.
What are you talking about? We got started finally, Sean. We're almost ahead of schedule, really. No, I don't want to stop. Guys, you don't know what it's like sometimes. We have, like, hours, and we still are rushing between this recording and Unsober. Like, how do we... Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, there's... This, like, last moment, I mean, she's getting the cloak, and she's still thinking, like, are they marrying me to Willis here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, babe, sweetie. It's so awful inside her head. I feel so bad for her with this whole thing unfolding the way it does. It's just...
Yeah. It's really awful. It is, you know, we, in this world, arranged marriages are standard, you know, in the sort of highborn society. But this seems to be a level above that.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of, not only is it, you know, just an arranged marriage, which is not necessarily uncommon, but that she doesn't know who she's marrying and that she doesn't even know she's getting married.
Yeah.
And she's getting this dress on, and it's a beautiful dress. I like the description of it. It sounds lovely. And she lets herself have a moment of real joy. When someone, I think it's maybe
the maid,
the handmaid, tells her that, you know, she does look really pretty. And she lets herself go, you know what? I do look really pretty, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's kind of twirling around in her beautiful dress and thinking to herself how...
Yeah, closer to your mic, ma'am.
Thinking to herself how she can't wait for Willis to see her and that he will love her. How could he not love her? Look at her.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that
honestly, anytime somebody is just like, how could he not go for me? Look at me. I'm just like, good for you, girl.
And she even has a moment where she's just like, he won't even care about Winterfell when he sees me. That's how fucking good I look. And then, yeah, Cersei just drops the fucking bomb. And it's so casually said.
Yeah.
You know? They have put her on her dress. They have put, like, jewels on her, which are, like, the stones that Joffrey gave her, which I had forgotten about that shit.
Mm-hmm,
so that they're making her wear the jewelry that he bought her on her wedding day to Tyrion, I think, is an unnecessarily cruel little...
Yeah.
...bit of, like, whipped cream on your fucking sundae. In your shit sundae.
Yep. Yeah, it makes sense that, like, if people saw him give it to her, they're going to be like, oh, what an honor. Those were given to her by the king, you know, and it looks lovely from the outside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we know that is another expression of ownership in its way.
Mm-hmm.
It's so... Ugh.
Yeah, and then him being in the position to give her away and then actually, like, legitimately saying to her, I'm your father, like, ugh.
Yep.
And so when she finally finds out, like, who she's marrying, well, that she's getting married, she's just like, wait, no. She says no out loud.
She does, like, put up more of a protest than I had remembered.
Mm.
Because in my head, I had her just sort of, like, in shock going along with it all. Sort of like not really even believing it's happening while it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she tries. She says to Cersei, you can't make me. To which Cersei says, of course we can.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and she's thinking to herself, Sansa's thinking to herself, like, no, I can't do this. I already have other plans.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't, but she can't say it out loud. Not that it would have mattered, but she can't even express that out loud.
Yeah.
And Cersei is just like, you know what? I would also be upset. This is terrible. And you are actually really pretty. And this is just going to be such a waste of your beauty. But, you know, what can you do? Tells her, like, Cersei is like, this is terrible. I understand if you want to cry about it. I would be crying too, privately. And tells her, you can have some dignity and suffer silently through this wedding, or you can make a scene and be like the laughingstock of the realm, or at least the fucking King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, you're going to be married at the end of this fucking day. So how you want to go about it is completely up to you.
Yeah.
And Sansa ends up telling herself, well, I guess I'll just have to be brave. And I'll just go through this fucking puppet show.
Yeah.
With a straight face.
Osmond Kettle Black, who says something about wolves are supposed to be brave, I think, right? Because he's, like, nicer to her than one would expect.
Yeah. He's the one that says to her, like, just tells her to do as she's told and it won't be so bad. Which I feel like is a lie people keep telling other people. And mm-hmm, I really wish we would stop doing that.
Yep.
Because often it is just that bad. And sometimes it's fucking worse.
Yes, it is. Just comply and you won't get hurt.
And then she finds out that Joffrey is going to be walking her down the aisle. Or presenting her to the scepter, whatever. And tells her to her face that I am your father.
And I'm your father and I'm going to rape you later.
Oh, yeah, I'm your father. I can marry you to whoever I want. And you being married won't fucking stop me from fucking you whenever I feel like it, from raping you whenever I feel like it. And then backs that up with a little bit of history about why it's okay and he's allowed to do that. And he mentions these other kings, including his father, who have all had whores and everything. So, yeah, he's really giving a lot of mixed signals here.
Yep, yep. Yeah, it's almost like any position that puts himself in authority over her, regardless of how much it conflicts with the previous position, is the position that he wants.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild.
He even threatens to marry her off to Ellen Payne or to some random pig farmer, mm-hmm. you know. And is basically like, how would you like that? You know, I could do that too if I wanted. So maybe you want to act better. You know, maybe you want to stop acting up right now because I could make it way worse for you.
Which is so funny because, like, honestly, being married off to a pig farmer feels like an...
I feel, right?
Step up.
I feel like then I wouldn't be in your fucking castle dealing with your fucking family. I'd live mm-hmm. on a farm somewhere, and that doesn't sound terrible.
But, yeah, I have a hard time believing that Joff is going to, like, abscond to the pig farm every time he feels like raping. I just think that he would probably never show up again, or very rarely. So that sounds ideal.
Yeah. I think maybe the first night it would probably be pretty bad, and he'd do something really humiliating, but then he would never come back, mm-hmm. you know? And it's right in the middle of her begging Joffrey not to make her go through with this marriage, that Tyrion appears and he hears her begging for anything but to marry him.
Yep.
And it's a real awkward moment for everybody involved.
Yep.
To Tyrion's credit, he is being really sort of compassionate, trying to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's apologizing for pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah.
And is kind of also like, hey, by the way, I also think this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this.
but she... honestly, he is the best option that was presented for her, like, out of what his dad was outlining. I mean, this whole thing is obviously meant to keep the Tyrells from getting her. But, yeah, I don't know. God, poor Sansa. It's just all around blows.
And Tyrion is, like, trying to be as comforting as he can possibly be under the circumstances. And he is telling her that she's very beautiful and that, you know, he apologizes for not having had an opportunity to come and tell her the news before the big day, but his father said it was out of the question. And she is thinking to herself, like, oh, he's awful looking.
Mm-hmm.
Am I supposed to tell him I think he's handsome? Will he even believe me if I try to say it out loud? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I supposed to say to him? And he offers, he's like, I know this is terrible. I know you didn't ask for this. And maybe if I had said no, maybe they would have wedded you to Lancel. Maybe that would have been better for you because he is at least handsome. And she's like, you are missing the point, sir, in her head.
Yep.
I don't want any of y'all trifling ass Lannisters.
Yes. I mean, I really wonder, too, with Lancel having been sleeping with Cersei.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, no. You know what I mean? Like, what would that even look like?
Yeah, I'm really curious. Like, I feel like Cersei would have wanted to stop that. I don't know if she would have had the power or the will to do it. I feel like if her father, if Tywin had set his sights on Lancel for some reason as, like, the one that Sansa has to marry,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how Cersei successfully puts the kibosh on that.
Yeah.
But I feel like she would try very hard.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But then, like, how does she explain why it can't be to her father? You know, she can't admit to the truth of the matter of why she doesn't want Lancel to marry Sansa. So what does she say? I'm very curious, like, how does Cersei try to argue for that in a way that doesn't implicate herself, you know?
Indeed.
And especially knowing how this Cersei in the books anyway really considers herself kind of a master strategist, right? I would have liked to have seen that conversation.
Yeah, I'm really interested in whether or not the rumors of it got back to her dad already, and he would be, like, already aware so she could try to not implicate herself, but he already knows. Mm-hmm. or if he hasn't heard about it, because like there's a real vibe that Tyrion figured it out and nobody else knows.
Mm-hmm.
So would Tyrion like sort of let it slip? You know, would that be something that he would even want to do? I don't know. But that would be interesting to see. Yeah.
I feel like if Tywin had any idea about the rumors, that would have made him even more insistent on Lancel marrying Sansa. Because you want to get him married and out of like the rumor mill of... Not that it would have had any concrete impact on whether he kept fucking Cersei. Because clearly being married doesn't keep you from fucking who you want to fuck.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I feel like Tywin would have been like even more adamant that, you know, we need to make this look better. So we're going to get...
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get Lancel married off. And that will take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. But Tyrion brings up Lancel, but then doesn't really say anything after. He's just as like, oh, well, you know, he's closer to your age and he's better to look at than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to marry him instead, Tyrion is like, I'll stop it and we'll do it. Which I feel like, would you though? How could you?
Yeah.
You're not the one calling the shots in mm-hmm. any of this. So that's a bold statement for you to tell her that you could end this farce on her word. But, I don't know. He's just out here saying whatever, I guess.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's like a kind of test to see how she would react. But all she says is, you're very kind, but mm-hmm. I am... My duty is to marry as the king commands. And
he doesn't have any acknowledgement to that specific statement that she makes. He just says... I know I'm not the kind of man that girls dream of.
Mm-hmm. And says, I'm not Joffrey, though. And she's like, that's at the very least mm-hmm. correct.
Yeah.
It's not a lot to recommend you, but it's not untrue. Mm-hmm. You have been much nicer to me than he ever was, so I guess... But
yeah. And the fact that this conversation is happening just literally moments before they walk out to get married is so wild to me.
So
they go get married and there it is not a it's not the sort of ceremony and celebration that I would have thought befitted, you know, a Lannister. An uncle to the king, but I guess it makes sense when you consider kind of how low Tyrion's social capital is at this moment, you know? So it's kind of a small affair, all things considered. You mm-hmm. know, there's like 50 people there for the actual wedding.
I think that also probably prepping for something bigger would have given them away, because the whole thing is to like spring this on the Tyrells. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there are no Tyrells at the ceremony. They don't show up until the feast afterwards,
mm-hmm.
Which was also difficult. But because they, like, no one really talks to her, and she's feeling, like, really abandoned by the Tyrells. Until she gets a dance with, like, I forget who it is. She dances with one of the brothers. Garland?
Oh, right. Yeah. Who's, like, very friendly and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I forgot about this. There's nothing in the notes about this, but I just want to mention this. She's, like, when she walks down the aisle, it says Lady Tonda's pregnant daughter was sobbing for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember about this girl?
This is the one that has the daughter, Lyles. Lolly or whatever.
Yeah. And she's like trying to get Tyrion
mm-hmm.
for her daughter. And I assume that the sobbing is because she's realizing that like that hope is completely dead, even though there was no real reason for her to think the hope wasn't dead because he never gave her any encouragement whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But Lolly's, you know, she's the one who got raped and is... I am assuming her mother was probably, like, telling her that that was going to be a way out for her of, like, the shame. I don't know. But it I am assuming that this reaction is due to her having thought that perhaps she could at least, like, set a sort of life up after all of this trauma with Tyrion, and she's not even going to get to do that.
Yeah, the only thing that I was confused about with this is that I know that Lady Tonda was the one that was pushing for the union between her daughter and Tyrion, but I never got, or I forgot, either I never got or I have forgotten, whether or not Lollies was really into that.
We like, don't know.
We never know what she thinks or what she wants, right?
Right.
It's just her mom sort of campaigning for this union.
I was thinking that she would want it just because of, like, otherwise she's just probably not going to be able to make a match at all.
But you're talking about herself or her mother?
Herself. And that she's probably aware of that. But also she could just be crying all the time.
Yeah. That's the thing too, is it's difficult for me to gauge because it's been mentioned that her daughter is, you know, I'm assuming sort of a cognitive disability of some kind. Like they just call her like slow, which is just a weird euphemism. Like I don't know what you're telling me with that really.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of what we learned about her story she actually thinks of herself, you know, and would she be sad about Tyrion? Did she even, you know, is she even, does she even have these aspirations or is this just all her mom?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I just wanted to mention it because I was sort of like, huh, what's going on there? Is that, like, because it's specifically mentioned,
mm-hmm.
It felt like it had to mean something, but it could just be an example of, like, how she is not getting over what happened to her. Because nobody is helping her to get over it, because why would they? Because it's considered mm-hmm. her shame.
Right. And, like, I mean, it's that. It could be, like, a comment on just how, like, sort of, oh, she's just crying at a wedding because that's what you do at weddings. Even if they're not emotional for you, you know that the social convention is to be, like, very emotional. And so I'm performing that because isn't that what you do?
Right.
Even though no one else is emotional because everybody understands this is not that type of party. But she doesn't understand the machinations behind this wedding. She doesn't understand it. This is not a loving union coming together. This is 100% political. So her reaction is almost inappropriate with the context.
Yeah.
But she's having this inappropriate reaction because, again, she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So we get into the ceremony and here comes a moment that's, like, so frustrating because I completely understand Sansa's fucking feelings on this. But Tyrion tugs on her gown to try and signal that she should kneel because part of the ceremony is putting the cloak of his house's sigil over her shoulders mm-hmm. and he isn't tall enough to reach.
Yeah. There's a whole thing where the exchange of the cloak, I had forgotten this completely. The scene is in the show. But the first thing that has to happen is her cloak has to be removed, and Joffrey mm-hmm. does that. And when he does that, he manages to feel her up mm-hmm. and, like, grab her boobs and shit while he's taking the cloak off because he can just do that, you know?
Yep.
And he is, like, grinning the whole time, gives it a little squeeze. It's just, like, horrible. Mm-hmm. So this is what's happening right before Tyrion starts to tug as she's dealing with this thing with Joffrey, which I feel like has a lot to do with her just being like, no, I will not. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on top of everything else of this morning, then I have to stand here and let this fucker call me, you know, my father to my face and then he's going to squeeze one of my tits and laugh about it. Yeah, no, I'm not kneeling for shit. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though poor Tyrion is just like, I'm just trying to get the cloak on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something I felt like in the show, they don't, in the book, when you're in her head, it just makes such sense how she reacts here. But in the show, it feels a lot more like, oh, she's just being a bitch.
Yeah, that she's just being cruel to Tyrion.
Yeah.
That moment on the show is about Tyrion. It's not about Sansa.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly it. And there's a note here from Austin. In the show, she does kneel after Joffrey takes away a step stool put on the dais.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Small but interesting change.
Yeah.
But yeah, here, she just straight up is like, no. And like when she finally does see his face, Tyrion's face, he's like bright red, totally humiliated. And she actually does feel like ashamed of herself all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And is like, man, that. But also, again, still, I get it. And I'm not like mad at you for it. Like, it sucks for him being in the middle of this, but like, it sucks for you more. It just does. It just does.
I just think that the whole moment is framed so differently from the show to the book. Like, here, they don't even provide a stool of any kind.
No.
Like, the show, the stool is there, and then Joffrey, because he's, like, such an evil monster, almost to the point of being cartoonish, you know, he kicks it away or removes it or whatever he does. Here, it's not even given.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up calling Dantos over to be a stool.
Yeah.
And so she's getting mad. And the whole time this is happening, like, when she doesn't respond to his tugs to kneel, Sansa is thinking to herself, like, I have envisioned my wedding day, and this, none of this is what it's supposed to be like. The person I'm supposed to be marrying, and this exchanging of cloaks is, you know, doesn't mean anything to me, but clearly it is, you know, a very important part of this ceremony, and it's like a moment that a little girl pictures as part of the whole thing. And it's just so not what she wanted for herself and thought that she was going to have. And then she just gets kind of stuck, you know?
Yeah.
But on the show, you don't know that she's thinking all this. You don't get this, you know, inner monologue. So the moment is very much about Tyrion's humiliation and Jeffrey. Of just him being a monster, so then the moment becomes a little bit about him as well. And she just gets lost in that scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wonder if they were like, they decided that because we're not in her head, it would have made her look too cruel if she just refused flat out, and that's why they did have her kneel. Because
She ends up putting her head, she kneels a little bit here, right?
Let's see, I'm trying to find the spot.
Dantos comes, Tyrion gets on, he gets on the back of Dantos and puts the cloak on her, and then she turns around, she looks at him, like you said, suddenly she was ashamed of her stubbornness, she smoothed her skirts and knelt in front of him.
Oh, that's right, I totally missed this. So she kneels now because she felt ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even catch that she, like, does wind up kneeling after because of, like, I totally missed that somehow. Right.
Yeah. So, and then they kiss, and it's awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, and this is when you were saying, like, she realized how ugly he is because they're so close now, and she thinks he's even uglier than the Hound, which I'm like, the Hound is somewhere off page, mind his business. Just shots fired for no reason.
Oh, I love that. So they're declared man and wife, and then they go to the wedding feast. Margaery gave her such a sad look, and when the Queen of Thorns tottered in between left and right, she never looked at her at all. Mm-hmm. Eleanor, Alla, and Mega seemed determined not to know her.
Yeah,
my friends, Sansa thought bitterly.
Yeah, this sucked.
Yeah.
I wanted, and I guess that's kind of what we were supposed to get a little bit from Garland, but I really wanted a moment. I mean, I get, they couldn't obviously publicly talk about their plan and how they had been outsmarted, you know, and all that. But this sort of not acknowledging her at all, I just felt so bad for her. Because despite whatever their thinking behind their behavior is, as far as Sansa's concerned, she's just been abandoned again.
Yeah. Yep, and finding out about, like, oh, well, they want your claim, and she's like, fucking Dantos was right. I was trying to make it into this whole other thing, and once again, I'm just overestimating people's motivations for things.
Yep.
And then she starts thinking about the bedding, and how...
This is a horrendous thing in this world, and I don't like it, and I wish it hadn't been included.
The bedding?
This
is, like, an actual thing.
Yeah, I remember reading about it when all this when the show was happening and there was all this talk about it.
Yeah,
I still don't like it.
That's fair. But yeah, she's just thinking about how like that when she was little, the whole thing had sounded so like naughty, you know, scandalous and fun. And now it's just very threatening. Like she's had her clothes ripped off in front of everybody already. And it was, like, for humiliation. So the idea of going through that again, especially when it's going to be Joff that is going to lead the charge in ripping her clothes off again, it's just so, like, re-traumatizing. And there is a moment where he's, like, announcing, all right, well, it's time. Let's do this. And Tyrion puts his foot down a little bit too hard. And tells him he will geld him.
Yeah, he's been drinking. Tyrion has been drinking. Everyone else has been dancing. She has even asked him to dance, which I thought was like her, like really trying. You know? And he says no, and it's basically like, I think everybody got enough of a laugh at us today. I don't think we need to give them any more opportunity to laugh. So she ends up dancing with a bunch of other people, which it starts out great because she's dancing with Garland, and he's very nice to her and very sweet. And then I guess every time the music changes, it's like a fucking hoedown or something where they have to change partners. Yep. I don't know. I don't dance like that. I don't know how all that works. But it's a series of people that she does not wish to dance with that she has to dance with. And some of them are nice. Some of them are very drunk. There's one point where she's having a lot of fun. And then I forget what happened, but someone tells her something. And she says afterwards that the last couple of people she danced with must have thought she was clumsy because she's just like... I think it's after she dances with Joffrey and he starts to tell
her. She's so shaken from that.
Yeah, he starts to tell her all the ways in which he can continue to rape her after he's married and she's married. And then, yeah, she's so fucked up after that conversation that the rest of the dancing is just, you know, torture. But, yeah, then the bedding thing happens and Tyrion is like, yeah, what we're not going to do is.
I really do love this. Like, Tyrion... It's a combination of things probably for him, but I like to think that he can sense her terror at this and maybe remembers about her getting her clothes ripped off and what that was like. I don't know, but it definitely feels like, yeah, it is also for him because he doesn't want to deal with that kind of, I mean, the whole thing is supposed to be that he would also be undressed
and, by the women, right?
Right. And I think that he would also like to prevent that from happening because the kinds of reactions that he would be getting from that would be also kind of traumatizing in his mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, he just has gotten really drunk by this point and tells Joff, if you try to insist on this bedding, you're going to have to fuck your wife with a wooden prick because I am going to geld you. And I'll geld you, I swear it. And then later on, it was a jape. It was, I misspoke. And his dad is like, yeah, you can see he's super drunk, right? And Tyrion is just like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm real drunk. Not drunk enough that I didn't know what the fuck I was saying. And I'm like, Tyrion, can you just shut up for a minute? Just stop. Just let them think you're so drunk you don't know what you're saying. Just go ahead. He says, keep being like...
Yeah, he's like, I'm drunk, but I'm not so drunk I can't fucking take care of my own bedding. I don't need all this extra help, people.
Yep.
But he does this other thing, too, because Tywin ends up also putting the kibosh on the whole bedding ritual. Tywin's just like, I think we don't need to do this. And he also says, I'm sure you didn't mean to insult the king. And that's when he apologizes, says he misspoke. And then Tyrion does the thing that we've seen him do forever, which is take shots at himself to sort of diffuse the tension. And this is when he says to everybody else that I only threatened to geld Joffrey because I'm jealous of how big his dick is.
Yep.
And my dick is so small. And then it says something like, and if you take my tongue out for saying that, how am I going to please my wife? You know, and everybody gets a real big laugh at it. Yeah.
I hate it. I hate all of it.
Meanwhile, Sansa just has to sit here while there's all this talk of, like, cutting people's dicks off and maybe ripping all her clothes off and being forcefully bedded in front of a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got to sit there while this conversation is happening with, like, no agency. She cannot do anything. She cannot say no to anyone, really. She can't just get up and fucking tell them all to eat a dick and leave. Like, she can't do anything but just sit there.
Yeah.
And it's the worst.
Ugh. So finally, come, wife, time to smash your portcullis. Oh my God. Want to play Come Into the Castle.
Oh, my God.
And she's just like, So they go to the bedchambers in the Tower of the Hand, which is just, like, apparently explicitly for their wedding night, which feels like such an extra slap in the face to Tyrion.
It really is, right?
Good God. Like, yeah, we'll let you use your old room.
Which is also his father's room now, right? Yep. So I'm going to let you go into your father's room to fuck your new wife as, like, a little bonus. But then down to your regular raggedy, like, rooms when all this is over.
So she chugs some wine. He is also chugging some wine. And he talks about his first wedding.
Yeah. She keeps calling him my lord. And he's like, my name is Tyrion. And she's like, oh, yes, Tyrion. I'm sorry, my lord.
Oh, and he says something about how, like, you're too formal. And she's just like, yeah, that's how we do, though. Courtesy is a woman's armor.
So this is also very different from the show. In the show, after the wedding, he just kind of tells her, they have, like, a conversation. It's sort of like this. And he tells her that, you know, he won't take her until she invites him in her bed or something along those lines. But they're clothed. And then he ends up kind of, like, leaving her alone in the bedchamber or whatever. But here, she gets undressed. He has her undressed. And then he undressed, and he gets undressed as well. Which is not how that shit went at all on the show.
Yeah, in the show, I think that the actress playing Sansa, Sophie Turner, I think her name is, was too young for nudity on screen. Or else they probably would still have done it. We get a reminder here of just how young Sansa is meant to be, which for some reason I had her as 14 in my head, but she's not even 13 yet. She's going to be 13 in a month. She's 12 years old.
He is, Tyrion, thank God, is disgusted by that, thankfully. He's just like, my God. But that does not stop him from being like, if you're down for this, I'd be down for it. But since you're not down for it, I'm going to respect your wishes.
Yeah, he calls her a child and then says, but I want you. And I was just like, oh, man.
Yeah. This whole thing when they first talk about the age, and then he talks about how formal she is, and she says a line about, you know, so she was fucking, they told me to be like this. And he, because she says, the actual line she says from the Septa is that courtesy is a lady's armor.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm your husband, so you can take your armor off now. And that's how we get her to being undressed. That's how we get there. Which I don't really care for. But here we are. And the quick paragraph of her undressing is, in my opinion, really hard to read.
Yeah. Yep.
It's nothing but her undressing. Like, he doesn't do anything to her. He doesn't attack her or touch her. But, and it's not even very long. It's short, but it is...
Agreed. And he tries to say, basically, look, I know that I am fucking hideous to look at, and don't lie to me. Because she tries to be like, no, no, no. And he's like, shut up. Yes, I am. However, my dick is the same as another guy's dick. And if you turn the candles off, you know, with the little remote that we've got, you won't be able to tell that I'm not somebody that you actually want to be with. So you could close your eyes and think of whoever. It's like sort of what he's hinting at here.
Yeah. And he's telling her, you know, his sort of like things that would go in the pro side of your list. You know, he's like, I'm loyal to those that are loyal to me. I'm not craven. I've proved that in battle. I'm smarter than most fucking people you're going to run into. And I can be kind. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't come naturally to me, but I can do it. And tells her that, you know what, I could be good to you. And so, yeah, he's kind of like selling himself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's looking at him and listening. And she realizes that he is terrified.
Yeah.
And she's surprised. He waits for
a response, but she doesn't even reply.
Yeah, she says to herself, like, understanding how terrified he is should have made her feel more kindly towards him. But it didn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
All she had was pity. And pity is death to desire. Yeah, it's true too, by the way. It is,
though.
If you guys didn't know that.
So, yeah, it's just that I do like that too, that it should have made her feel for him more, but it didn't. Like, just sometimes our reactions to things are not what we expect them to be.
It feels very much too, like, and I'm trying to think how to say this without, I'm not trying to say that Tyrion is not being authentic here. I believe he is actually means what he's saying here, but it feels almost like he wanted, like, clearly he wanted her to be like, yeah, it's fine. But I think he thought that that sort of impassioned plea would have much more of an effect on her.
Mm-hmm.
And that he doesn't mind if it's pity. Like, a pity fuck is still a fuck.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But from her, but since we're not in his POV, we get to find out how it actually hits.
Yeah.
And it does not hit good. You know, it does not land. It does not make her feel anything other than, oh, what a sad state of affairs this all is.
Right. So she lays with her eyes closed. She tries to pull the blanket up and he tells her no. And then she feels him, like, touch her breast and literally trembles. Like, it's a shudder is the way it's described. And she's trying to, like, keep her cool, but all of her muscles are tense.
She also has no idea what she's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, should I open my legs? Like, does that happen now? Like, what, you know, what are we doing? What am I supposed to do next? She has no idea what's fucking happening and what's expected of her.
Mm-hmm.
And he can see all of this happening. And he's just like, girl, open your eyes.
Mm-hmm. And he finally is like, I can't do it. We'll wait. And maybe eventually, when you trust me a little more, we can try again. And it says his smile might have been meant to be reassuring, but without a nose, it only made him look more grotesque and sinister.
Yeah.
Which, I really
rough
do.
Rough stuff.
Yeah, that is not something that he can control at all, but I can imagine that is, you know, that that is the effect it would give.
Yeah. There was a moment when she's undressing, and right before he tells her that, you know, he, you know, she's still a child, but he still wants her, and she's looking at him, and she says that there was hunger in his green eye, and fury in the black eye, and she didn't know which scared her more. Mm-hmm. And then later we have this moment where she's looking at his face, and he's trying to smile at her, and it just is like, she knows he means well, but it is just, it's just not coming across.
Yeah.
And then she has the, like, just look at your husband, look at all of him, and she's doing this thing that she's sort of been schooled to do, which is, you know, find his beauty. All men are beautiful. And you know what? It's like, I hadn't thought about it, but if you are in charge of raising a girl child from, like, a high-born house where the odds are she is going to end up getting married to someone she barely knows and doesn't love yet, you probably do have to start training them from a young age how to work through that, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that Septa Mordaunt had told her as a child that all men are beautiful, you just have to work very hard to find it. Like, of course you would teach little girls that, right?
Yeah, yep.
But I had, you know, it never occurred to me that that would be part of the schooling. But yeah, so she's trying to, you know, do what she was taught to do, and it's not working.
Every part of him is so ugly. There's nothing that she can find, and I'm like, well, the beauty of Tyrion is that he is like a compassionate, intelligent person, but there's no reason for her to trust that or believe that. You know, there's absolutely nothing that she has experienced that indicates believing this sort of thing does any good for her.
Right, right.
And, like, ultimately, to be honest, even if she were to believe Tyrion, he doesn't have power to defend her.
Exactly.
So he can mean well, but he isn't actually positioned to do anything with that.
Exactly.
That's materially effective.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she just had, you know, a low-key alliance with some of the most powerful people in King's Landing when she was dealing with, you know, the Tyrells.
Mm-hmm.
And look how that worked out for her.
Yep.
You know, and they are considerably more powerful right now than Tyrion could hope to be. And it still meant nothing.
Yep.
And so she's looking at Tyrion in this moment, trying to find the beauty. She cannot find it. And she starts to think to herself about how unfair all of this is. And what did I do to fucking deserve this? What sin was so great that this is a reasonable punishment? And girl, same. Yeah. I ask myself that all the time.
Doing a lot of finding out for very little fucking around, actually. Would love to fuck around more and find out less. So, yeah, then she finally says, he says, I will not touch you until you want me to. And she says, what if I never want you to? And he is really shook by that.
Yeah.
And she just.
He's like, never? Like, I didn't understand. I didn't think that was a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the sort of thing that I can understand it hitting him that way. But also, in her current position, I would have expected that response from her, to be honest. In, like, the situation that we are currently in, and you're offering to, like, never touch her, being like, what if I never want you to, is a perfectly reasonable thing to ask, to be honest. I just, you know, I was sort of surprised at the fact that he is so caught off guard. But
yeah. I think, again, too, it's that the beauty of the POV, right? Mm-hmm. Because in his mind, this statement is enough that her reply should automatically be so filled with gratitude that the idea is, of course, maybe one day I will, right? Mm-hmm. It's and the honesty of her just being like, yeah, and what if it's never? Like, he's really shocked because in his mind, this sort of me doing you a favor and swearing that I won't touch you, which, by the way, is my right as a husband, so you can't really hold me to this, but I'm such a great guy, I'm gonna go ahead and make this offer to you. And her reaction is supposed to be so grateful that of course she would consider a moment, a day in the future where she might really want to fuck him. You know, it's that thing that people do that a lot of times men do, you know.
Yep.
And again, it's like the fucking when he's telling her, like, his good selling points, you know? Like, it's not necessarily that they are conscious that they are doing this thing, but they're doing it nonetheless.
Yes. I'm not like other guys.
Kinda, yeah.
Weird. I'm not like other guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, the chapter ends with him being like, "Well, I guess that's why God made whores for imps like me." And then,
like, it's low key incel-y, you know. Mm-hmm, it's got some low key incel energy. All of this, you know.
Yeah.
Like, here I am being a nice guy, but because I'm not attractive, you know, you're not giving me the time of day. But I'm nicer than any of these good-looking guys that you probably fantasize about, you know. But you won't fuck me, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see you, Tyrion.
Oh, and there's also the thing. I forgot that Garland specifically says, like, I know, I see how you look at Loras, but I promise, like, he isn't for you. And I had forgotten that that's said in the way that it is said.
Yeah. There's he says something. I feel like he says something else to her as well. That I thought was kind of important. He comes and asks her to dance, and he gives her a message. He says, oh wait, is it a message? No, hang on. She dances with him. They talk about Willis. Oh, they start talking about the name that he has, because his name is Garland the Gallant, his nickname. And I feel like he says something. Oh, when she's talking about how happy she is. And he says, your eyes give lie to your tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that moment, too. It's like the only person that acknowledges that she is not having a great day today.
Let's see. His name is... Oh, yeah. My brother Willis gave me the name Garland the Gallant to protect me. I was a plump little boy. And we do have an uncle called Garth the Gross. So Willis struck first. Though not before threatening me with Garland the Greensick, Garland the Galling, and Garland the Gargoyle. Which, Garland the Gargoyle is actually pretty dope. I kind of like that one. So, okay.
Oh, there it is. I knew I didn't just imagine it. He says to her in a whisper, my lady wife is most concerned for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's like the only kind of acknowledgement from the Tyrells at all that this shit is fucked up.
Yep.
You know, it's the only thing she gets. It's not really a real message, but it's the only sort of like acknowledgement that, hey, I thought we were all like friends and, you know, you cared about my well-being and now this fucked up thing has happened to me and you guys are all powerless to do anything about it. So we all just have to pretend like we were never all like... plotting together. and you've all just sort of left me, you know, I want to say to the wolves, but the wolves mean a whole different thing in this book. So what else do you get left to?
The hyenas, the vultures.
Vultures. So yeah, that was the other thing about that little moment when they danced together that I thought was like, God, that's all she got. That's it.
Yeah.
That was all she got.
So, okay. Then we go to Arya. Very interesting, like, events in this chapter for her. Sort of weird. So she is riding through the Stony Sept, the biggest town Arya had seen since King's Landing. And Harwin is talking to her about the battle here, the Battle of the Bells, and the fact that, like, King Robert had always credited her father with being the one who actually won this battle.
Mm-hmm.
And Arya is just noticing, like, the place has clearly had some recent refurbishing. Probably there has been another battle that has been fought here a lot more recently. Yeah.
I love just, like, all this burned wood outside the front gate. Like, the front gate is all new wood, and there's, like, a giant pile of charred wood. And it's like, oh, I see what happened here.
And they come in, and the captain of the gate allows them through. And Tom asks, how are you guys doing for food here? And the gate guy is saying that the huntsman brought in a flock of sheep. There's been some trading. South of the river, we even have a harvest that didn't get burned. But we are also getting jumped for shit a lot. We'll have wolves show up. We'll have mummers show up. And if they don't want food, they're trying to rape women or just steal. And this is when the Kingslayer is brought up. Talk is he slipped right through Lord Edmure's fingers. And Catelyn would be really mad because that suggests that her father's dead, which he is not, and everybody is continuing to like call her brother Lord, which she just really does not care for.
I love that Lem questions it. Mm-hmm. It's a reminder to me as a reader how important titles are, and how much information is conveyed just by how you address somebody or how you refer to someone. So Lem is like, "Oh, did Lord Hoster die?" And the person who's talking is like, "I don't know, he's dead or dying or something."
Close enough. Yep. So then it says the Huntsman is going to find Lannister. They think that he might be making for the Blackwater. If Sir Jaime's hereabouts, they'll find him. I've seen them dogs rip bears apart. And Lem is like, rip them apart. Don't do that. This guy is worth a lot of money. You don't just kill him. Come on. He knows that, right? And this dude is like, well, the thing is that he has suffered a very, like, horrible event recently. When the Westermen came through, they raped the Huntsman's wife and sister, put his crops to the torch, ate half his sheep, killed the other half for spite, killed six dogs, and then threw the carcasses down his well to poison the water. So I'm pretty sure just ripping the man apart would be fine right now.
It's not really not about the gold. It's about the principle.
It's not always about the money, Spider-Man. So at the center of the town, there is this like fountain with a trout that's got water pouring out of its mouth, and people are gathering water there. But a few feet away are these cages, and there are people stuffed into them.
Yeah. These are cages for birds, right? For
crows. Cages, yep.
And they have grown men stuffed inside of them, which is just, this is not going anywhere good. Nope. And it didn't. I was correct. This was terrible. It was all terrible. The first three cages, the men are already dead. So it's just rotting corpses in the cages being pecked apart, which I just, you know, this world, I feel like it's a brutal world that has been created. You know, it's war-torn. There's all kinds of, you know, brutality happening. And a lot of things are inescapable. A lot of things are outside of the hands of the little people. But some things you do have control over. And you don't have to have dead bodies hanging in crates and cages at your town square where you go to get your water from. That is you creating your environment. And you don't have to live like that.
Rashawn is about to become a motivational speaker for the small folk. Listen, guys, I know shit's hard out there. But how about we do a little bit of Marie Kondo, Does This Spark Joy?
Right.
And this spotty, I feel, probably doesn't, and we'll just put it in the trash. You could even donate it.
You know, I'm not saying you weren't right to kill these men. I 100% agree they deserved it, right? But once they are dead. It's been enough.
Yep. Agreed. That's not punishing them anymore. That's punishing yourself. Like, you're just standing here next to the smell of rotting human
beings. You know, like, cool. Who is this for? At least put that shit on the gate for outsiders to see. It doesn't need to be by the goddamn water fountain.
Yeah, you know, that's really what I was thinking. Was like, this, if it was going to serve as, like, a warning, this isn't the place to put it.
The best I can do is the torture of these men, because they're all screaming for water, and that hanging them close to the water fountain is like added a layer of torture to it.
That's probably
But I like, even knowing that, I'm still like, yeah, no. I see what you're trying to do here, and I'm still saying no.
So this Lem is like, what the fuck is this? And a woman says, justice. And he's like, y'all ran out of fucking rope to just hang a person in the humane way that we used to do? And
Tom wants to know who's in charge. Who said to do this?
Yep.
Was it Wilbur? Did Wilbur say this was okay? And someone has to be like, oh, Wilbur dead.
Dead for a year. It was the Mad Huntsman caught these wolves. Arya went cold.
Yeah.
Wolves. They're yeah. Rob's men and my father's.
Yeah. So she finds out that they're Rob's men before, like, finding out what exactly these men had done.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first guy that's telling Lim why the huntsmen are, like, out for blood, he says Westermen, which I'm thinking those are, like, the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. And some of those people. But then the guys in the cages are wolves, so we don't know exactly what they've done yet. So when Arya realizes who's in the cage, she doesn't know, like, what their offense was.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, it felt for me at first like I thought she was just almost like, I can't believe my father's men or Rob's men would do anything that deserved this kind of punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Like, the idea of and then, of course, she has no idea about... Well, she has some idea because they ran into it at the end as well. Reports of, like, northern men engaging in, you know,
mm-hmm.
some shoddy and shady behavior. But it still feels very much like it must be really difficult for her to understand that her father's men could behave so dishonorably,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's still a shock anytime it comes up.
Yeah, there was that sept that got, like, looted and everything, and they mm-hmm. said that it was wolves that did it. So she's looking at these guys, and we get very detailed descriptions about all
yes,
of their injuries
do.
And their being covered in flies. And one guy was gelded, as we heard a threat of. Last chapter, and there's just, like, maggots eating yeah. away at this, like, hole.
Mm-hmm.
And
she wants to know whose men they are. She tries to ask one of the guys, but mm-hmm. they're just so, like, beyond, you know, they're delirious at this point. They can't answer any fucking questions. All they can do is, like, beg for water. And someone yells at her to, like, leave them alone.
Yeah.
This is none of your concern. Just keep moving along.
She asks finally, what did they do?
Yeah.
They put 8 people to the sword at Tumbler's Falls. They wanted the Kingslayer, but he wasn't there. So they did some rape and murder. That one there did the raping. He jerked a thumb toward the corpse with maggots where his manhood ought to be.
Yep.
Yeah, this is when she decides that she's going to give them water. She knows already, and she's still extending some compassion here.
Yeah, she's thinking to herself, like, how could these men be Rob's men? Is this supposed to be my pack? These are wolves, like, and she wanted to hit them, she wanted to hurt them, and she wanted to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the emotions of having an idea of who your people are
mm-hmm.
and what they're capable of and what they're not capable of, and how you kind of just accept that the people on your side are better than the enemy and would never engage in the behavior that the enemy, you know, like, there's like a morality to it. You know, my side's the good side,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I might be misspeaking, you know, cause everything is so spotty, but I remember when the show was on, there was a lot of talk about how the show was different because in this world, it's not just good versus evil. I remember a lot of people telling me that.
Yeah.
But I feel like ultimately the show ended up kind of falling into that anyway.
I think so too.
So I my assumption is that it veers very wildly from the books. And I think that I'm starting to get a really good indication of that myself from reading. because I don't recall any of our air quotes good guys and their people doing any of this kind of shit.
I don't remember if there's like mention of it, and it's just not something that's like depicted on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't say for sure that we don't get any, but it's certainly not they don't go to pains to highlight how both sides are fucked up. They mm-hmm. certainly don't seem to be as concerned with like going down the road of morality being sort of gray. So yeah, this is interesting because it's a tactic that I have seen in writing and media before of, like, watching somebody who is being subjected to a horrific punishment before you find out what it is that they did to deserve it. And then when you find out, you have to decide whether that justifies what is being done to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always sort of an interesting question to me. I find it a kind of a fascinating debate to have. How much punishment is like worth it? How effective, what purpose is it serving? Is it just mm-hmm. to make you feel better? Is it actually helping you make like feel better? It makes me think of that episode of Black Mirror, White Bear. Do you remember that?
I do.
Spoilers for an old episode of Black Mirror at this point, but the gist of it is this woman is being hunted and tormented while everybody around her films it and watches her be hunted and tormented and injured. And they do nothing to help her. In fact, they seem to be rooting for her to be hurt.
Yeah.
And it's like all out of context. And you're just like, what the fuck? And then you find out that she and a partner were party to a really horrific, like, probably rape and murder, it's not spelled out, of a child. And that her memory is getting erased, and she's being put through this again, like, every day for people's entertainment slash, like, as her punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, one of those things where before you know what she did, you're just like, what the fuck is this? And then once you find out, you have to be like, so do you think this is cool? Because you really should look at that.
Right.
It's
a very complicated conversation
mm-hmm.
That requires a level of honesty that I think a lot of us have difficulty with, and I'm including myself in that, like an honesty, not just with other people, but with ourselves
mm-hmm.
about what exactly it is we need to feel like justice has been served, how much of it is actual retribution, you know, how mm-hmm. much of it is restorative. Am I at all invested in the rehabilitation of the perpetrator
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
am I just pretending that that is something I'm concerned about? Yeah, and the thing, too, is that a lot of those questions are moving targets, you know?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
You can have a really strong feeling on it in one case and then find that you're kind of ambivalent for the next case.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably why we should probably look at our system
as a
whole, because it is, you know, it is subject to our whims in a lot of ways, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. And when you think about how, like, I remember when I was younger, into early adulthood, really believed that a lot of what is considered the law in the United States, at least, is, like, fixed and applies to everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get older and you realize, oh, shit, it does not apply to everyone, though, does it?
Nope.
Like, not even close. Doesn't that even come close?
Nope.
And justice isn't meted out equally either. You know, like, this person commits this thing and, you know, gets nothing. And the next one gets, you know, 40 years. And there's just, like, how much of it is actually up to the discretion of individuals is, I feel like, something that we are not really taught.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
You really think the law is applied, like, evenly across the board, and then you become an adult and you realize that, no,
this particular judge was just like,
yep.
Aw, but yep. He's a swimmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Three months.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. And then having cases like that where justice is so clearly not served, what it does or what it can do, which I think is where the honesty part becomes challenging, is I know that I pretty much politically will say that I am a prison abolitionist, right? Like, I don't mm-hmm. think that our carceral system works and that, you know, it's fucked up and flawed. But also, I think that motherfucker should have rotted in jail.
Yep.
You know, like, so yep. I'm also a hypocrite.
Yep. 100%. And the whole thing here about, like, how they're being hung up to rot next to their, like, water source in town mm-hmm. is kind of a beautiful metaphor for that, in a way, of, like, you are punishing yourself also.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem fine with that.
Yeah.
And like, just that there is an element of, like, it damages you if you take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
But some people are willing to suffer additional damage for a sort of, like, arbitrary standard that they have in their mind that has to be reached.
Yeah, yeah. That is, you know, also the fucking insidiousness of, like, these systems of oppression that exist is, like, when you talk about how patriarchy also harms men, but they mm-hmm. participate in it because the benefit is worth it. So they take right. the harm for the benefits. Same with, you know, misogyny and white supremacy and all that kind of, like, those systems also damage the people that it benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But people have decided for themselves that the cost is worth or outweighs, you know, the benefits yeah. outweigh the cost of whatever damage that they're doing to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I saw some post the other day, and it was not, there were no sources cited. So I'm presenting this as a, sounds like it probably could be true, but also I don't have any valid, like, backup for it. But the premise was, when Americans are asked, should prisoners be allowed to attend college level classes and get degrees, they say no. But when they're asked, should prisoners be forced to attend college-level classes and get degrees, they say yes. And it just feels like the kind of thing that I could see being true, because you act, like, allowed implies that we're giving them some leeway and a privilege.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But forced is, you know, it's punitive, and we mm-hmm. want that. That's mm-hmm. always the direction that we're going to go in. And it just gives lie to the whole, you know, alleged rehabilitation point of prison.
Right.
Which we pretend that's what it's for. And it's not. Nobody is actually pursuing that in... It's not the uniform goal.
Yeah.
And especially, it can't be the uniform goal if we have prisons that are for profit. So...
Exactly.
That's
exactly what I was about to mention. Like, before we had sort of, like, the veneer of rehabilitation, right? This is for society's good. But then after a while, we just flat out came out and was like, nope, this is for money.
Mm-hmm.
And we all collectively as citizens were like, yeah, it's fine to have prisons be for profit. Like, of course that makes sense. And the fact that our prison population exploded after we, you know, went with for-profit prisons is just, I don't know, a coincidence.
It's just a really weird trend that has absolutely no explanation.
Yeah, it's really weird that, like, when prisons build in your township or wherever, and then they enter into a contract in which the state promises however many bodies per year, that
mm-hmm.
those bodies just magically appear.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, I don't know. It's a real mystery.
And just FYI, guys, the for-profit prisons, they make all kinds of stuff. And sometimes it's furniture. And just if you see something that says made in the USA, there's every chance
mm-hmm.
that it was made by essentially slave labor in a prison.
Most likely.
So just, you know. There's so many things that we try to use as a metric to be like, I'm going to be a responsible consumer. But we just don't actually get given the information to do that in a real way.
There is no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Yep. So she is giving them water as one of the men, Lem, is like, this isn't decent. And they're like, yeah, well, what they did wasn't fucking decent. And they're very, like, protective of their method here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when she gives them water, this dude is like, Mad Huntsman isn't going to like to hear that you gave him water. And Angui says, yeah, he won't like this either. And he just shoots them.
Yeah.
And kills them immediately. And they don't really get any, like, pushback on that in the moment.
No, they just move on to the next fucking thing. Mm-hmm. Because this little town of people and whatever relationship they have with these guys, it's like tense, but it's not like so adversarial that like they go for blood after he does this. It's just kind of like, all right, well, when the boss gets back, that's going to be between you and him.
Mm-hmm. You just then, wait till my husband gets home.
It does have that, doesn't it? It does feel very much like wait till your father gets home. So then they go to the inn/brothel with this woman, Tansy, who I thought was delightful. And also her name is Tansy, and I don't know what to do with that. I feel like it's probably just a name. I think it's even mentioned earlier that it's a very common sort of like lowborn name when it first came up in conversation. But also I can't help but being like, is it Tansy? Is that the Tansy? Is that the thing? You know, I don't fucking know. But I will admit to you all that my brain immediately did the thing.
Oh my god, I love that, because I was thinking that as well and was sort of like, is she gonna sort of like pick up on this at all? Yep, there it is. Yay.
Yeah, there's a couple of little fun things about this night. I love that one of the working girls is most likely one of Robert's heirs. I love that. I don't know if it has to do with anything, if it goes anywhere, or if it's just one of those things you observe and then you move on to the rest of the story. But I just love it. I love it so much.
Yes. And it's sort of an interesting scene, because when she is like sharing who her father was, she's flirting with Gendry. And I think she's like sitting in his lap.
She says something to like what it is.
Oh, she's next to him. Never mind.
They're all together. It's Arya and Gendry, and she's there. I forget her name, if she even has a name. But Gendry says something. Arya says, I think this is a brothel. Mm-hmm. And then Gendry's like, how would you even know? Which I like, what? But okay. Whatever, sir. How would you know? And he says something like, brothel is no place for a highborn lady to be. And then when the other girls laugh, like, who's a highborn lady? And they look at Arya and laugh at her. And she goes, well, I'm a king's daughter myself. And that's how it comes
up. Right.
And Arya's like, oh, you're fucking being all, like, you know, trying to be a little saucy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you are not. And then the girl laughs and says, well, I might be. They say I look like King Robert.
King Robert fucked my mother when he hid here. Not that he didn't have all the other girls, but Leslyn says he liked my ma the best. And then Arya is like, yeah, she does have hair like he had, but Gendry has the same hair, so I guess it doesn't mean
anything. I laughed so hard. I laughed so hard because I forgot that that's still not a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for the rest of everyone, you know, the whole Gendry being a bastard is not really anything.
Yep.
You know, it just felt like in a show it meant more, because, you know, time constraints, they had to get a lot more in, you know, and I think they use Gendry as like a stand in maybe for other characters that I might meet later or whatever. I'm not really sure. But I just remember reading this and being like, oh my god, that's right. The whole idea that he's a bastard and he had to get out of King's Landing to save his life, like, that is nothing.
Yep. And he, like, really forcefully declines.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has figured out who she is and that they're probably related. I think that there's, like, a sense here of him just being like, this is fucked up. I'm out.
Doesn't he end up with her, though?
I don't think so.
He ends up later with somebody.
He may end up with somebody, but I don't think he wound up with her.
Let's see if it tells us. By the time her cup was empty, Gendry hadn't come back. Let's see.
I didn't think that he wound up with anybody. At one point, Thomas Sevenstrings is with some girl. He's with Tansy, actually. Or Greenbeard is. But, and I forgot that there's this moment where Arya is thinking, inside the peach, everyone was jolly, except it seemed to her some of them were laughing too hard somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I rather like that line. Just like, yeah, we're attempting to really make this a night because we need it, but it's not natural.
Yeah.
It's not happening organically.
I misread. Gendry threatens to go be with her. But
right.
It doesn't say that he actually did. He just tells Arya to go away. He's going to drink and maybe go find that black-haired girl and ring her bell for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that idea that maybe you're thinking that maybe he understands that they could be siblings.
I had not thought of that
at all. That's really fun.
Because he knows about himself. You know? But
so that's, let's talk about that for a second, because I think I have forgotten. So when, it's so long ago, when fucking, what's his name, that leaves them out of King's Landing, the
Yoren?
Yoren. I was going to say something. I was so close and so far. I wish I could hear what was in my brain. When he gets Gendry out of town, do they tell him why he has to go?
You know what? I'm saying, like, now that I said it out loud, he knows about himself. I'm like, well, wait, does he? Because, like, Ned comes and sees him, and all he has to do is look at him and be like, fuck.
Yes.
Right. And Gendry's training at this, like, blacksmith is paid for, because it's not something that you can do for free. And he knows that. So I've been assuming that he has fucking put two and two together. But I'm realizing, like, maybe he hasn't. Maybe he doesn't know.
Don't they pay the blacksmith for Gendry?
Yes.
Right? So, yeah, right. I feel like he doesn't know why he's been singled out and sent on this fucking adventure, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, yeah, so maybe he doesn't. Maybe I'm just reading into this and he just, the talk of who her mother is and her connection to Robert, maybe he has enough knowledge of that it's, like, just kind of bothers him, not because he thinks they're related, but because that was also what happened to his mother,
right? Kind of thing, that feels like something there, you know, knowing that you were like the child of a sex worker, and that these highborn men and just men in general, you know, roll through town, run through all the women, and then go on their merry way, you know, and leave people behind to fend for themselves. Maybe this is all just hitting a little too close for home, and he's just not in the mood to act like it's a big party, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would explain, too, why he, like, lashes out at Arya, because she comes to find him, and it's just like, hey, man, what's the deal? And this is after he keeps her from being fucking molested by some old creep who thinks that she's, like, part of the brothel.
Yeah.
And he tells the guy, she's my sister, because he knows that this dude... you have to have ownership over a female.
Yeah.
For another guy to actually back off.
Mm-hmm. She's got to belong to somebody. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, she's just up for grabs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, she says, why'd you say that? You're not my brother. She's not getting it. And he says, oh, right, I'm too low born to be your fucking relative, of course. Yeah. And she's like, that's not what I said. That's not what I meant. Yeah, it is. Go away. I'm going to drink this wine and maybe I'll find that girl. I said, go away, m'lady.
Yeah, he is definitely in his feelings about a lot of different things, and something about, I mean, he's been a little off since he found out who she was.
Yeah.
And has felt a little betrayed by that for some reason. I want to mention, too, it's not important to the story, but I love that it's like a recurring gag. Fucking Tom O'Sevens, they're like, you know, you got a kid here, right? And Tom is like, well, he doesn't sing very well, so he can't be mine.
Oh my God. dude. And she's like, he's not here anyway. And Tom is still arguing about it. I'm like, he's not there, dude. Why don't you just, like, let it drop?
And there's this Tansy woman. I don't know. We only get, like, see her for a quick minute. But I really did enjoy her. She's just, you know, just seems like she's here for fun. The women that run these brothels are always, like, so much fun. Mm-hmm. I know that in real life it can be very difficult and problematic and abusive and then, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But in the real world.
Right.
But in this world, so far, they have all just been like, it's just like the only time you see women that are sort of like independent,
mm-hmm.
that don't seem to be beholden to a husband, you know, they could just out here running their own businesses and running the girls and living very nicely, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I enjoyed her. My God, when they first show up to inn, and she's like, green beard, or is it gray beard?
And she's like, all right, you guys can come in and, like, we'll give you a bed and everything, but you are taking baths because your nasty asses left us full of fleas last time, and I am not having that again.
They make Arya take a bath. She's like, I just had a bath 2 weeks ago. This is completely unnecessary.
And eventually Arya goes up to the bed before anybody else is in it and just gets to luxuriate in this, like, giant bed that she isn't sharing with anybody, which was just such a mood. I love that.
I was really upset the next morning when they woke up and they were all in
bed. Yep. At least she sort of seemed to sleep through the place being sort of, what's the word I want? I was going to say colonized. That's not quite right.
No.
But you know what I'm saying? Settled. Invaded.
Invaded.
Yeah. So she dreams that she's the wolf again.
Yeah. And it's a little like this scene is, again, with her, it's always like, a lot of the time, anyway, with her dreams, she's, like, in the middle of killing something. which, you know, when you think about it, of course. Because that is really what she wants to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, she goes to sleep with her murder list and in dreams of being Nymeria murdering prey. And it just feels like it tracks. And then she wakes up the next morning and there is a fuss outside. And there's dogs. And everybody's making all this noise, and it looks like that this huntsman, it's weird to say huntsman because we're reading Dresden right now, but he's returned, him and his people have returned, and they have a captive. And rumor is, well, it's not a rumor, Arya hears someone call him a Lannister, I think, or she hears somebody say it.
Yeah.
I can't remember who, but somehow it becomes clear that they have a Lannister as a captive.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wakes up and they're all looking out the window, trying to see what's going on. And, of course, everybody is like, oh, it's the Kingslayer, because that's the talk of the town, right? But it's not.
Nope, she sees his face. I had forgotten that she, like, totally knows what he looks like.
Yeah.
So.
It's not him. When she saw his face, the gods had answered her prayers after all, but they don't tell us who it is. But I feel like it has to be the Hound.
Oh. Does the Hound have gold hair?
Does it say anybody has gold hair?
I thought he did. Oh, no. That's what he says. The crows will be picking out your eyes while we're spending all that good Lannister gold of yours. That's what he says. My bad. And he's getting, like, shit thrown at him and stuff, and he's not flinching, like, at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's just very, like, still and sullen. And,
Yeah, somebody's telling him he's going to rot in those cages. Oh, not to go back to the horrible, horribleness, but I want to mention in the cages, there's one guy that's so big, and he's stuffed in that tiny little cage that, like, his skin is, like, squeezed out between the bars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So thinking about this, you know, just the size of a grown-ass man being in one of those cages. And that's what people are telling this captive. That, like, you see those over there? We're going to put you in one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
Yeah.
And there's something about, there's the description also of, like, the sunburn, because mm-hmm. they're just out here exposed, because they're mm-hmm. all, they've been stripped naked before they're put in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got these, like, bars of so red like skin mm-hmm. and white skin. And yeah. When she talks to him, he opens his eyes, and it's described as his face was so red that when he opened his eyes, they looked like two boiled eggs floating in a plate of blood.
Yeah.
And I was like, that horrible, is just right? really too much, sir.
Like, calm why down. Would you why would you ever write that sentence?
Yep.
Also, that is not a descriptor that I find helpful. I don't just carry that image around in my head. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. That's dead on. Like, no, thank you.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But, so...
He gets eaten by dogs, by the way, guys. Just FYI.
Wait, what?
The fat man, he gets, like, yanked out of the cage, and his body hits the ground, and then the dogs that come with the huntsman tear his body apart and eat him.
Oh, my God. Really?
Mm-hmm.
The
Did
fuck?
You miss that?
Apparently.
Man, I just, like, I don't know why what I closed my Kindle, but yeah, it's like...
What? Hold on. Hold
very
on.
Close to the end of the chapter.
Is it close towards the end?
Here it is. Let's see. A dozen riders sat astride their horses, watching the townsman open the fat man's cage and tug his arm until his swollen corpse spilled out onto the ground. The dogs were at him at once, tearing chunks of flesh off his bones.
Yep, yep, yep. There it is. I see it. Yep.
There it is.
I just went right past that.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that, you know, it could be like... To be a Lannister man, you doesn't necessarily mean you are literally a Lannister, right? So, I'm thinking that it's just somebody in their employ, you know, as opposed to being someone whose last name is Lannister.
Gotcha.
And I figure the
so
timing...
So your guess is it's the Hound.
I think it's the Hound because I feel like at some point their whole buddy cop adventure, you know, has to start.
Mm.
And so I feel like this is as good a time as any.
That's fair. Okay.
Yeah. So, also we have no idea where he is. We know he's out there. We know he's wandering around. I'm pretty certain he's not dead, you know, based on the show. So yeah.
All right. Well, that's as good a theory as any. All right. Well, I want to say hi to new patrons real quick before we wrap for the day. So, of course, as you all know, we have Drinkwater and Carol Pinkerton. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Unspoiled family. You're now Unspoiled Brats. I hope that you're happy. And please come and join the Discord and chat with us and... You know, meet other people and have debates about things, argue with each other and with me, tell me I'm wrong about stuff. Please feel free to become part of what's a word that I want right now? The shifting, ever changing sea that is the unspoiled community. You were like discourse, and I'm like, how about I add 13 words to that? but thank you guys again so much for becoming patrons. And again, if you are able to, I could really use the support right now. It has been a difficult few months. So if you are interested in finding out more about what the tiers are and what you can get and what the community is like, you can go to patreon.com/unspoiled and find out all about the extra shows that Rashawn and I do for High Rollers. The one that we're doing today is going to be about pet peeves, and that should be animated. And of course, I am doing my coverage of Mistborn with Miles, but we're going to be wrapping up on the last available book pretty soon and taking some time to cover the Sookie Stackhouse series, as I have mentioned. And also, we put this out there on the Dresden episodes. I'm going to mention it here as well. Rashawn and I were talking about the possibility of covering the rest of Stranger Things. I had started the show with another co-host who is no longer part of Unspoiled, and we only got to season two. And then I never watched the remaining seasons because I kind of thought I might eventually cover them. And Rashawn really loved season four a lot. And so I was thinking maybe we could do it. But there's also something to be said for how things are part of the zeitgeist when they are first out. And then after they've been released and people watched them literally months earlier, they don't care as much about hearing, you know, people's takes. So I'm just sort of curious how many of you believe that you would actually care about coverage of the rest
and
of
be honest, like, because right now you're all in the middle of it, right? So right now everybody's thinking, yeah, do it, do it, do it. But,
because like there are so many times that people are like, oh yeah, I think I would like that. And then they just don't actually listen to it or really like support it or, you know, share it with people. And the reason that I do shows that are not on a patrons only feed is to get an audience. You know, I want people listening, as does anyone who is running a podcast. So think about it, you know, being something that we wouldn't probably even be able to start until like June of next year, maybe. Like, it could be that long. And whether or not that sounds like something you would still care about by then, because how you feel about it at this moment isn't going to be accurate anymore. So, but I do want to hear what folks have to say about it. So, I think that's everything. Is there anything else you want to add?
No. I think I'm okay.
All right, folks. Well, we love you all very much and hope you're enjoying the coverage. Until next time. Toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.
Joffrey. Cersei. Walder Frey.
Hodor!
Meryn Shan. Tywin Lannister.
Was an Unspoiled Network podcast.